Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 121. I'm recording it on Wednesday, April 15th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is T-Roots. The title of the podcast is Integrity Matters. The question of integrity has been on the table in the discussions at the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities dating back to the first day of our investing discussions, May 13th, 2002. And a lot of times, there have been a lot of slogans put forward during our discussions. Of course, the passive investing enthusiasts have all sorts of slogans, you know, marketing slogans, I call them. Timing doesn't work. Buy and hold. Stay the course. Stocks for the long run. And, you know, in developing the rational investing model, I have been pressed to come up with some slogans of my own because you can't always... I mean, I try, but you can't always put forward a 2,000-word post. Every now and then, you need to just sum it up. And so, you know, there have been slogans like, timing works. Sometimes I'll say, short-term timing never works, long-term timing always works. Or sometimes I'll say, valuations matter. And then after I used to use that one for a while, because that sums up the whole debate, valuations. That's the difference between passive investing is the model that says you don't have to pay attention to valuations. Rational investing is the model that says you do. You have to look at the price of the stocks you're buying before you buy. Valuations matter. But after I started using the one valuations matter for a while, it hit me. You know, there was a time, I give the title of my book at the beginning of every podcast, Investing for Humans, the book, it's not finished, I'm working on it. A long ways to go yet. But I struggled, I don't know, probably 2 years with the title. Some of the titles seem laughable now. Some of them seem pretty good, but some of them seem laughable compared with where it ended up, because, of course, I've been learning as we go. And it hit me after a while that when you say valuations matter, that's almost it's almost using the passive investing lingo to make your point, because it's just the kind of point that a passive investing enthusiast would make. It just sounds sort of techie. Valuations matter. You know, valuations are demonstrated through data. So you can draw lines on charts and say, valuations matter. Here's a chart proving it must be so. But what are you saying when you say valuations matter? What you're really saying is people matter. Or you could say emotions matter. Because what are valuations? If the stock market were efficient, if investors were rational, as the passive investing model posits, stocks would always be fairly priced. There would be no overvalue. There might be a little bit of overvaluation, but there would never be extreme overvaluation or extreme undervaluation. The very fact that we went to 3x fair value in that insane bull market proves that passive investing cannot work. In a world in which passive investing could work, that going to 3x fair value is a logical impossibility. So why is it? What is it about in stock investing that causes valuation, that causes overvaluation and undervaluation? It's the fact that investing is done by humans. And humans are not 100% rational. Humans have emotions. So you could sum this all up. You can, one way to sum it up correctly is to say that valuations matter. But it may be that that phrase is a little too rooted in the passive investing lingo. A better way of saying it might be people matter or emotions matter. That sums it up. And valuations is just our way of quantifying how emotional investing is at a particular time. In other words, when you're at fair value or when you're at low prices, emotion is not reflected in the price all that much. So stock investing is a fairly safe activity. When you're at 3x fair value, stock investing is dangerous as all get out because it's so emotional. It's so non-efficient. In other words, passive investing assumes the market is always efficient. Passive investing works when the market is efficient, but when the market is 3x fair value, it's not efficient at all. It's incredibly inefficient, and that's why passive investing doesn't work at such times, why it's a disaster at such times. So the rational model, it's really all about knowing when to be passive and when not to be. You can be passive when emotion has not overtaken the stock price. But when emotion has overtaken the stock price, you had better not be passive. So it's all about knowing the difference. So one of the slogans I use is, people matter, or humans matter, emotions matter. But one segment of that, another claim that I often make, and this is an argument I make often, is people will say, oh, Rob, do you have to talk about this stuff, this people stuff? It makes people very uncomfortable. People would like to think that investing is all numbers, and you're coming along and you're saying, oh, people matter and emotions matter. That's yucky, icky stuff, and we don't want to talk about that, Rob. Please. Well, the argument I often make is I say, the stuff we're not willing to talk about, that's the stuff we most need to talk about. Now, that's a journalist for you. That's my reporting background coming to the fore. But I think it's true. I think when we're afraid to talk about something, that's a sign that it scares us. And the fact that it scares us means on some level of consciousness, we of course know it's true. When I tell people that valuations matter, I'm not telling them something they don't know. Everyone knows it. And that's just the problem. We all know that valuations matter. We all know that passive cannot possibly work, but we sure do want to fool ourselves about it. And we sure don't want anyone citing the historical data showing us that we're living in a fantasy. So, I'm a believer in the idea that when you put forward an idea and you see that people don't want to hear about it, that means they need to hear about it. It means you need to explore it a little more until we come to enough understanding about it that it doesn't upset us. And there's many aspects. When you say emotions matter, there's all sorts of things you can talk about. You can talk about we're emotional because we're afraid we're not going to be able to retire. We're emotional because our friends are getting ahead of us during a bull market. If we invest sensibly, we're emotional because the experts say something and we don't think we know enough to go against them. There's all, we're emotional because we hope, if we could get more money, we could retire sooner or we could live a different life or send our kids to college. There's a million, cases where emotion comes into play in investing decisions, not one or two or three. But one of the ways in which investing becomes intensely emotional, and we've seen this illustrated thousands of times during the first 7 years of our discussions, is on the question of integrity. integrity. During out of control bull markets, and we've recently experienced the most out of control bull market in U.S. history. During out of control bull markets, we all lack integrity. If we didn't lack integrity, out of control bull markets wouldn't be possible. Because out of control bull markets are liar markets. They're markets in which we tell ourselves lies about how stock investing works, and then we tell others lies about how stock investing works. And if we weren't telling such lies, the bull market wouldn't be possible. Because if we were shooting straight, when stock investing got dangerous, we would tell each other that, and once we knew it, we would pull back. We would sell stocks, and once we sold stocks, prices would go back to normal levels. So there would be no bull market. So by definition, a bull market is a market that lacks integrity. So another way of saying it is, you know, you could say valuations matter, you can say humans matter, you can say emotions matter, you can say integrity matters. In other words, don't invest as heavily in stocks at times of low integrity. That's one way of formulating the message that I argue for in the articles and the podcast at the website. There was a guy at bogleheads.org a couple weeks ago, and he was, you know, they're talking there about, does buy and hold still work? You know, they're having doubts. But of course, you know, a lot of them are dogmatics. So they're trying to defend it. They don't want to let it in. They're defensive. And this guy was saying, look, it works. These ideas that I bought into, I'm a genius. You know, they have to work. I mean, I can't be wrong. But Lamar, you know, it's this fraud. It doesn't work in a situation where there's all this fraud going around. Can't expect passive investing to work then. Well, that's the whole point. You know, he's right. I mean, depending on how you look at it, you could say he's what he's saying is absolutely on the mark or absolutely, you know, preposterous, depending just on your perspective. He's right. Passive investing can't work in an environment of fraud, but who told him to invest during a time of out-of-control fraud? That's what the PE10 level was telling him. That's what the P10 level tells you. When the P10 level is above 20, the fraud is high. When the P10 level is above 25, the fraud is just rampant. It's just overwhelming. So lower your stock allocation, buddy. But he didn't do that. When he had people pointing out that the fraud was rampant, that we can't even trust the big name experts who get paid millions of dollars to tell us how stock investing works, to give us the numbers we use to plan our retirements right. They can't even calculate mathematical calculations properly. He was saying, anybody who tells us this stuff is a troll. We got to remove them from the board. We can't allow this. This is dangerous. This guy's telling us accurate retirement planning numbers. Get rid of this guy. That's not fraud. He cheered the fraud on, this fellow. And lots of people did. So when you're cheering the fraud on, you're going to get more of it. You know, what we cheer on, we get more of it. Of course, he paid money for it. He bought books. He you know, watched television programs, whatever it is. All of that encourages the fraud. That's what a bull market is. A bull market is when a small number of people, there's always going to be a small number of people who are going to engage in, you know, certain amounts of fraud. And if they're shut down, they're going to stop. If people stamp them out and say, hey, you know, this is bad news, they're going to stop. They're going to say, well, maybe that wasn't such a hot idea, you know, giving bad numbers. But if the people applaud them and say, hey, I'll buy your book and I'll recommend it to everybody at my website and you're a hero, they're going to do more of it. And then when others notice that doing more of it pays off, they're going to do more of it. That's just human nature. So, a bull market is a fraud market. That's what it's all about. If stocks go up 6.5% real per year, they don't call it a bull market. They just call it a normal market. Normal market is, you know, it's a nice return. It's a great asset class. But, you know, nobody's going to write big headlines. Stocks went up 6.5% real this year. That's not going to get the, you know, the front page of the New York Times. But when they go up 30% and you're borrowing 24% from future returns, that gets on the front page of the New York Times. That's a bull market. That's a fraud market. So what we're really saying is integrity matters. And, you know, it comes up all kinds of ways. One of the ways, there's two things on my mind. One is a book called Animal Spirits, and one is a thread going on at the Money Bloggers Network Forum. So I'll start with the book, and hopefully I'll remember to talk about the thread. But the book is called Animal Spirits, How Human Psychology Drives the Economy and Why It Matters for Global Capitalism. And it's authored by George Akerlof and Robert Shiller. You know about Robert Shiller, author of Irrational Exuberance, the best book on investing ever published, in Rob Bennett's humble opinion. George Akerlof, I'm not as familiar with, but he was awarded the 2001 Nobel Prize in Economics. He's clearly a smart guy. And I thought, I have a feature at the website called Today's Passion, where I provide a link each day to an article somewhere that I think is worth looking at, whether I agree with it or not. And I saw one by, what's his name, Richard Posner? I think Richard Posner might be at the part of the Chicago School of Economics. And it's considered conservative school, but I would call it libertarian, really. It's what I really think it is. And he wrote, not a review, but an essay on this book, Animal Spirits. And he was being critical of Shiller. And so I figured maybe I should look at the book, since I'm, you know, all the work I do is really an attempt to extend Shiller's thinking into, you know, new realms where it hasn't been explored. And I thought this might be a more general presentation. The idea is to write more about economic issues. And I thought, instead of writing just about stocks, you know, Shiller here will be writing about these bigger picture items. Now, I was not too impressed by the book. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing I found offensive. It has certain passages that I thought were very, very good. Passages where they talk about behavioral economics. Very exciting stuff. So there are some examples they have in there that are very powerful. And they make one argument that I've made on my podcast, and I haven't heard other people make it, so I was glad to hear somebody make it. I think it's right there in the preface. They talk about the focus of the book is Keynesian economics, and the argument they make in the preface is that Keynesian they agree with Keynesian. And I take it that they're saying Keynesian is liberal. So Posner identified Shiller as a liberal economist. So they're being characterized as liberal and Posner as conservative, although I'm not sure I agree with those labels so much. But, you know, both sides seem to agree with the label, so they don't seem to have a problem with it. But they said, you know, I agree with this factual presentation. They said, up until the Great Depression of the 1930s, in the U.S., we basically had a laissez-faire economy, a libertarian economy. I mean, it wasn't truly libertarian, but it was as close as we've ever seen on planet Earth, so it was pretty darn close. And the feeling in the Depression is that laissez-faire had failed, and it was, you know, the New Deal was Keynesian economics replacing. So it was a liberal approach to economics replacing a conservative approach to economics. And I put those words in quotes, the liberal and conservative, because I'm a little uncomfortable with it. But both sides seem okay with it, so I think it's fair. But what the book says, I don't know if it's Akerlof speaking or Shiller. Akerlof is mentioned as the lead author. The book argues that the Keynesian ideas were watered down a bit for the purpose of selling them. because people were so accustomed to the laissez-faire, classical, they call it classical economics, that, you know, Adam Smith's invisible hand, all that sort of thing, that they had a watered-down Keynesianism, which was the more liberal approach, the more government, you know, government, greater government involvement approach. They had to water it down to help people understand it, to relate to it. So they watered it down to sell it. And then they say, well, watering it down left it vulnerable to intellectual attack. And as the years went on, people started to attack it. And in the Reagan era in particular, it was attacked for its weak points. And the weak points were the result of this watering down. Not that the ideas weren't good, but because they had been watered down. And then the attacks were successful, and now we've moved very far away from Keynesian economics with the deregulation of the Reagan-Clinton era. Now, I don't buy into every last word, but I have said on podcasts that I believe passive investing is essentially laissez-faire economics in new clothing. And I think that's right. The complaint with laissez-faire is that it's ruthless. It's ugly, vicious. And I'm a free market guy, and I think Akerlof and Shiller, I didn't get the feeling they were anti-free market. They certainly were not, let others speak to it, but I'm not an economist, but I didn't get the feeling at all that they were favoring socialism. They were favoring a free market, but they were saying there needs to be this government role, which I thought we had reached a consensus on in the New Deal. That was sort of the whole point. But the complaint with laissez-faire is that it's ruthless. You know, in the last podcast, I talked about, you know, you could take a 12-year-old kid and tell him, go work in the coal mine for a nickel a day, and if you don't like it, buddy, starve to death. You got a choice. You got total freedom. You can work for a nickel a day in a coal mine, or you can starve. Total freedom. Yeah, that's laissez-faire. And that's passive investing. In my eyes. I've never heard anybody else say it, but I believe that. Passive investing is a ruthless approach because, and this is why it becomes so vicious on discussion boards when it's challenged, because when you look at what passive investing really says, it says ignore price, and the only thing that has ever caused stocks not to be a good investment in the history of the United States is ignoring price. It's stocks are always wonderful so long as you take price into consideration, but passive says ignore it. And it leads to a nightmare every time. And because, you know, on some level of consciousness, the people advocating it know this. They know it doesn't make sense. And so they can't stand to have people report what the historical data says. Because if people find out what the historical data says, nobody's going to support this gibberish. And so it has to be, all free speech has to be ruthlessly suppressed in order to sell it. You can't sell it otherwise. You can't sell it if both sides are allowed to make their case. And I don't think you can sell laissez-faire capitalism. You know, if you actually report that five-year-olds are working in coal mines, people are going to be repulsed. So free market is a wonderful thing. But without some kind of restraint, without some humanity entering the picture, it changes from the best of all worlds to the worst of all worlds. And what passive investing essentially is it's laissez-faire sneaking in the back door and taking over our economy again and destroying it again, to be sure. That's why we're now seeing the Great Depression play out again. We allowed this vicious, ruthless, mean-spirited idea, moronic, I would add, irrational idea, to take over our economy. And, of course, it does it in stages. It's not as if, you know, people don't come forward and say, hey, here we're going to destroy your economy. You know, please take a vote. What they do is they inject a little bit of this mindlessness, and it grows year by year. And so when they started promoting passive investing, valuations were low. But then each year they went higher and higher and higher. And by the time they got to 3x fair value, nobody dared to point out the emperor wasn't wearing any clothes. So it sort of snuck in. And I think that's the way it happened the first time. When we had classical economics, it didn't destroy our economy the first day. It took until 1929 for that to happen. But it ate away at us. So I would say classical economics or passive investing or whatever you want to call it, is a non-integrity, lacking integrity. Because what integrity means, what the word means is, I don't have a dictionary in front of me, but it's integrity means, you know, consistent. Everything pulled together. In other words, you don't decompartmentalize. You don't compartmentalize your personality. You know, if you say something behind somebody's back, you say the same thing in front of him, because you have integrity. You're a whole person. You don't just take your smiley face out. And a purely ruthless free market lacks integrity because it's not human. What you're doing when you take that attitude is you're saying all that matters is money. We're people are just these little, you know, consumers, you know, stock buyers, you know, victims. They don't have hearts. They don't have souls. They don't have dreams. You know what happened? They don't have lives. What matters to them? It doesn't matter. They bring in dollars. So we'll sell to them, you know, whatever sells. If we destroy their lives, you know, oh, it happens, you know. And you get this indifference all the time on discussion boards. When you talk about death threats and smear campaigns and board bannings and boards being burned to the ground. I just got this the other day at this thread at Money Blog Network. Mrs. Micah came on and she said, hey, you know, people have a right. You know, if people didn't like this stuff, they could, the blog owners could stop it. Nothing wrong with death threats or board bannings or burning boards to the ground. Just because, you know, thousands of people built the board, sure, but this one guy, it might have hurt his feelings that you told the truth about retirement. Can't, you know, you can't, that's his freedom. He's got the freedom to make death threats and smears, and that's his freedom. We've got to have freedom. See, unregulated freedom is hell on earth, says Rob Bennett. So that's the story. So this book, it did a good job, I think, in setting that up, you know, in the preface. And some of the discussions of behavioral finance were very good. But the purpose of the book was to sell an economic prescription for our economic troubles of today, our crisis. And that I didn't find so exciting. I don't take a position whether they're right or wrong. I almost just don't care. I had a podcast that I said the economic stimulus is a sideshow, and that's how I feel about this argument between the whatever you want to call them, the classical economists versus the Keynesians. I just think they're sort of missing the point. What they're saying in the book is, you know, Obama has really had three types of advice. One is to do what he did. Two are the people saying he's created these huge deficits. They're gonna destroy the economy. In other words, what he's done is bad. It's gonna make the problem far worse. We won't be able to recover. This is so bad. And then the third group is the group that says, and Paul Krugman at the New York Times, who's written some good stuff, is the leading voice on this third strand, which says he needs to spend far more than he spent. This is not nearly enough. And I think my sense is that that's what this book is arguing. They weren't super specific about it, but that was the sense I got. They're saying he needs to go farther. And, you know, as for how much he needs to spend, I almost am neutral because I don't feel spending is what this is about. The good news is I don't think it would take all that much money to recover from our economic crisis. That's the good news. The bad news is it'll take something a lot worse than money, a lot more painful than spending money. And that is saying those three magic words, I was wrong. See, that to me, and that's integrity. When somebody can say, how do you get your integrity back when you've lost it? When you've told a lie, how do you get your integrity back? You say, I was wrong. And once you say I was wrong, it's over. It's magic. Truly, they are magic words. You say those words, it's all over. Nobody can say anything. They can say, oh, you're stupid, if they want. They can say, you're stupid. How'd you get it so wrong? And you can come back and say, yeah, I'm stupid, but you know what? I'm human. Have you, you know, like Jesus said, he who is without sin, pick up the first stone. when I get caught in a mistake at the website, I just say I was wrong. And then if somebody says you're stupid, I say, well, yeah, that's true. But he who has never made a mistake, you know, throw the first stone. I made mistakes. So I sort of feel I've got this, protective cloak around me because nobody can say a thing about me. I mean, they say it all the time. But I'm just saying I've got an answer. My answer is, what do I always say? Our knowledge of investing is primitive. So I just say, hey, our knowledge of investing is primitive. Rob Bennett's a screw up. Sorry about that, by the way. Sorry about that. If I could flip a switch and be perfect, I would do it. But, you know, take it up with God. If you don't believe in God, take it up with evolution. But whoever it is, whatever force it is that put me here, is a screw up. I mean, you know, this God / evolution thing just doesn't know what it's doing, and it made Rob Bennett all sorts of messed up. And I'm just, I can't help. I'm just doing what I can do. So, take your shots, and they accept the challenge to take their shot. They do that all the time. But and I'm not saying it doesn't bother me. I'm not saying that I like it when they take their shots. But I'm saying I've got a clean conscience because I've told people that I'm human. And I think that's the answer. I think if all these people, and I don't mean Akerlof and Shiller, although I include them in the mix, but Akerlof and Shiller and, well, Reagan's not with us anymore, but if he were, and Obama and McCain and Bush and Clinton, if all of them, and Bogle and Graney and Lindauer and who else, if they all could get in a room and say, I was wrong, or I don't know. Yeah, I don't know would do it. That's enough. Then we could all sit together and say, okay, now that's out. Now that we've cleared the air, what is it we need to do? And it probably would involve spending some money. I mean, I'm not saying that it would cost zero, but I really don't think it has to cost $1 trillion. All the things you need to have a thriving economy are there. The smarts, the technology, the experience, the education, the motivation, the industry. I mean, all that, it's all there. But there's a piece missing. And the piece missing is we are slaves to these outmoded ideas of how the economy works, which is called the rational man thesis, and when we apply that to stock investing, how stock investing works, the efficient market theory / passive investing. That's the problem, in my opinion. And it doesn't cost money to say you're wrong. But I think my view is they could spend $10 trillion. It's not going to save it. Because if you spend $10 trillion, where's it going to come from? It's got to come from the people in the country. If you take their money, they don't have money to spend anymore. Where's the money come from? So you could spend $100 trillion. It wouldn't solve it. All you would be doing is printing up $100 trillion and handing it to people, and every dollar would be worth a penny. So you'd be in the same place you were when you started. And on the other hand, you could spend zero, and that wouldn't help. That would be free market, spend zero. But the free market got us into this mess. The free market people are the people who promoted passive investing. That was free market, wasn't it? Wasn't it a free publisher that published the book Stocks for the Long Run? Isn't Vanguard part of the free market? They sell mutual funds, and we freely buy them. There's no law that made us follow passive investing, was there? Isn't it a free market on the internet? When people run smear campaigns to stop people from learning what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates, isn't that the free market? So, going back to the free market ain't going to solve this. Free market caused it. And spending $100 trillion isn't going to solve it, from the government. So what would solve it? What would solve it, in Rob Bennett's opinion, is spending something a whole lot less than $100 trillion, but doing it to encourage the free market, not to destroy it or to enslave it, to encourage the free market, but to encourage a different kind of free market than what we saw during the passive investing era. To encourage a free market that is humane, you know, which is sort of what the New Deal was all about. The reason the New Deal was a success is it wasn't extremist. It wasn't socialism. And it wasn't laissez-faire capitalism. It was a mix. It was a compromise. It was a deal where we all got together and we said, look, we'll all give in a little bit on our ideology. The free market people are going to give in and they're going to allow Social Security and Medicare and whatever else. You know, minimum wage. And the pro-government people said, yeah, well, we're going to allow businesses to still, you know, make their decisions because they've brought us a lot of good things, you know, a lot of wealth, a lot of advances. And that worked. So the part of this book I like is where they do sort of historically set things up that what's happened is this vicious idea of laissez-faire capitalism had been conquered and it was let out of its box with passive investing. Because passive investing, you see, it was sort of like a carrier, you know. It started with just a few economists putting it forward, and then it didn't matter, you know. Who cares what these, you know, ivory tower eggheads think? But then they, you know, they injected it into everybody's 401k plan. They, you know, our employers were pushing this passive investing junk on us in our pay stubs. You know, they'd say, put your money in a 401k. Oh, and invest passively, you know. Stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, don't pay attention to price, timing doesn't work. So they injected this poison into every middle-class worker. And then we took it and we injected it into our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers and our community, our fellow community members on discussion boards. And we all destroyed ourselves. So I think the answer is, you know, I think our mix of government and free market is just fine. You know, I think these battles about, you know, are the liberals going to win or the conservatives going to win? To me, it's a bore. It's not that the mix, we figured out the mix in the New Deal. The trouble is we were hijacked by an idea. And the idea goes under different names. But it is in the practical realm, it's called passive investing. If you go to the academic world, it's called efficient market theory. And if you go to the economist, it's called rational man thesis. It goes under different names. And historically, it's called laissez-faire capitalism. Adam Smith called it the invisible hand. It's the same idea under different clothing. The invisible hand is the same thing as the efficient market, really. Intellectually, the invisible man says, we'll all figure it out. It's all going to work without any government. No, you know, no, you don't have to rein it in. It'll work out on its own. And that's just what the efficient market theory says about stocks. You don't have to warn people that stocks are dangerous as all get out when they're selling for 3x fair value. No, 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 no. The market's efficient. It'll figure it out on its own. Keep your hands off. You start telling what the historical data says, we're going to ban you because you got to keep your hands off. Nobody can tell the truth. Nobody. You got to let it work out on its own. That's death. In my opinion. I'm telling you my opinion. That's what this podcast is, you know, these podcasts are all about. That's an integrity issue. Integrity means pulling together. So the good thing about this laissez-faire capitalism, I'm clearly knocking it, but it's full of riches. The invisible hand is not wrong. There's a great truth there. And there's a great truth to passive investing and to the efficient market theory. The great truth is an intellectual truth. It's a great, powerful truth. I'm not saying to discard it. What I'm saying is to rein it in. To tell the other side, we are not computers with legs. We are humans. We have brains. We do calculate risk, but that's not all we do. We also have emotions, and that's what the title of this book, Animal Spirits, it's essentially, he's talking about emotions. We get caught, our emotions get caught up in things. That's why there are insane bull markets. That's why there are insane bear markets. That's why there are crashes. And the only way we can prevent that stuff is to talk about it. And if we believe in this gibberish that all we are is computers with legs, walking brains, we can't talk about it. So we doom ourselves. So we don't need to spend money. We need to spend courage. We need to work up the courage to reclaim our integrity. Now, I think I can be brief about the discussion board thing. I started a thread. I've been posting at these different blogs, guest blogs, on the problems with passive investing. And the goons, John Graney got the number wrong in his retirement study. So he's spent the last 7 years of his life organizing smear campaigns against me and anyone who talks about what the historical data really says on safe withdrawal rates. So he follows me around. He has my name in some kind of Google notification service. So whenever my name shows up on a guest blog, he sends his goons there, and they disrupt the thread. And so I went to the Money Blog Network. It's a discussion board for people who write personal finance blogs. And I said, look, we need to organize. We've got a problem here. People are abusing the internet. They're trying to silence opinions. We should care about free speech. We should take back control of our blogs. We should let people know who the bad guys are so they know whose comments to delete. We need unified action. And a lot of people, I'm sure a lot of people like it, and they're afraid to speak up. Because the ones who speak up in favor of the goons, they're vicious. And you have to ask why. Now, I always say I don't want to give in to doom and gloom. And one of the things that's positive is that thread would not have stayed up before the crash. I've been doing this for 7 years, and I can tell you that thread wouldn't have lasted 2 hours before the crash. And I put it up Sunday night. It's now Wednesday afternoon. In about 6 hours, it'll be 3 days it's been up. It may still be taken down, but there's over 600 page views. And it hasn't been taken down yet. That's a very encouraging sign. I didn't have 100 people coming forward and saying, Rob, we're going to help you out, man. That's discouraging if you want to look at it that way. But in relative terms, we're getting there. So that's a good sign. But the arguments. What I find, what's always been fascinating about the great debate from the first day is the arguments made, and it's the same argument made for passive investing and for abusive posting. It's always neither one of them. No one ever makes rational arguments for these things. No one's willing to defend abusive posting. And no one's willing to defend not changing your stock allocation at times of insane prices. What people always do is they get angry. And they just, they intimidate. They smear and they intimidate. And what that tells me, that's what I call defensiveness. Defensiveness, and you also see a certain amount of indifference. You see defensiveness among the intense people who are really upset. And then the broader community, it's indifference. It's like, we don't really agree with this, but it's too much trouble. I don't want to stick my neck out. Indifference. Well, why? What does that tell you? Why are they so angry? And why are so many indifferent about the anger and about the abusiveness? It's because it's a challenge to their integrity. The name of my thread was, we need to protect ourselves from goon posters. Well, say that you agree. Say that you put up a post and you say, yes, you're 100% right. Rob, 100%. What are you saying? The obvious question is, why didn't somebody do this years ago? This didn't start going on just last week. I sent a letter to my congressman, Frank Wolf, and you can read it on the website. It's in the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website. And I quote from a Forbes article where all this is cataloged, these smear campaigns. The abusive stuff that goes on the internet. The Vanguard Diehards Board didn't start prohibiting honest posting on investing when Rob Bennett started posting there in July of 2005. We had a guy, Pete Elm, who told us that they had been doing smear campaigns there for years before I showed up. So this has been going on the internet since its earliest days. So now Rob Bennett comes along and says, let's do something about it. A lot of people might agree, but the obvious question is, why didn't we do anything last week, last month, last year? Why have we been sitting on our hands? While good people who take time out of their day to help us out with investing questions are being smeared all over the internet. Why haven't we done anything? You see, that's a challenge to people's integrity. And the good news is, the reason it makes them angry is because they possess integrity. If they didn't possess any integrity, it wouldn't make them angry to have a challenge. They just say, hey, yeah, I don't have any integrity. What else is new? That's not how they feel. They want to feel that they have integrity. That's why they're defensive. Because you're telling them something they know is true, and they don't want to acknowledge it. And now, let's take it another step. What happened on May 13th, 2002, when Rob Bennett pointed out that the studies we all use to plan our retirements get the numbers wildly wrong? Why were people so upset about that? Again, it's an integrity question. I don't have an IQ of 140. I'm certainly no statistical whiz. It's the last thing I am. So how is it that I was able to discover the analytical errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies and John Bogle wasn't able to discover them and Bill Bernstein wasn't and Scott Burns wasn't and Mel Lindauer wasn't and John Graney wasn't and Bill Scholder wasn't? Huh? Wasn't an intellectual exercise. That's why. They've got me beat intellectually. It was an integrity question. I don't say these people lack integrity. Well, they lack, you know, I don't say they lack it entirely. They clearly lack it to some extent. If they didn't lack it at all, they would have spoken up. So I am challenging their integrity. I try to be fair and balanced about it. You know, I try to tell both sides of the story. Because there are signs they possess integrity. Bill Bernstein wrote a whole chapter of his book explaining why the numbers are wrong. He wouldn't say it in public that they're wrong. When the goons were standing around, he said, oh, I don't know what the safe withdrawal rate is. I don't know. He calculated in his book. I could tell him the page. So he doesn't have the courage to stand up and say it in a public forum, but he did have the courage to write it in one chapter of a book with, I don't know how many chapters were in the book. But he spent a whole chapter on it, so he has some integrity. And he wants, you know, he probably, I imagine, he wants to think he has more. We all do. And John Bogle does the same. John Bogle's the one who taught me that valuations matter. So John Bogle has enough integrity to do that. But he doesn't have enough integrity to stand up and say, this passive investing stuff I've been pushing doesn't make sense. So when I told the truth about safe withdrawal rates, what I really did is I challenged the integrity of the stock selling industry without knowing I was doing it, but that's what I was doing. And they got it. You know, they're more aware of what they've done than I was. And they picked up on it and they said, this must be crushed. And the integrity of these boards, these board communities, where, you know, they have some guru figure. And then the guru has a goon squad that protects them from questioning. You know, that's a lack of integrity. If you speak with integrity, you don't need a goon squad. And the integrity of these sites where they promise to protect us from abusive posting. But when the chips are down and they you know, there's abusive posting going on, there's no enforcement. That's an integrity issue. So the internet lacks integrity. Internet discussions lack integrity for so long as the goons are in control. And investing discussions lack integrity for so long as we can't tell the truth about the academic research of the past 30 years that shows that valuations affect long-term returns. So we've got integrity issues everywhere we turn. And my point is, you know, the point of what we see in the threads is people don't want to talk about it. But my conclusion is that's what we most need to talk about. And so my take on this book, Animal Spirits, is, yeah, there's some good stuff in it, But it doesn't. It talks about behavioral finance. It does that, which is good. But behavioral finance means talking about the lack of integrity in the investing advice we've heard for the last 30 years. And it pulls its punches on that one. It turns to this easy solution of let's spend $10 trillion, get out of it. You know, we'll restore people's confidence in the market that way. We'll give them $10 trillion and they'll all feel better. I don't think that works. And I love the example I gave in an earlier podcast. It just came to me during the podcast, but I've returned to it because I like it. What's going on in our economy today is it's comparable to what happens when a man cheats on his wife. And, you know, if you're a woman, switch the sexes. If a man, say that a man tells his wife, hey, you know, we haven't gotten out to dinner and a movie in a long time. You know, we're all caught up with the kids and all this sort of thing. Let's hire a babysitter for Friday night. Let's go out. I'm going to take you out to a nice dinner. You know, we'll have a nice conversation and we'll go to a play. You know, we'll go in town, get dressed up, have a lot of fun. She's looking forward to it. You know, it's been, you know, time passes sometimes when you're married. You know, it's been 6 months since they've had a night on the town, or a year, you know, whatever it is. You know, they have young kids, and the kids are now old enough. You can have a babysitter, but it's been a long time since they had a romantic night, just the two of them. So he sets it up, and she's all excited, and he's excited too. But then, you know, there's this thing comes up at work, and it's just got to get done, and it's his job. And he calls her up, and he says, "Look, honey, I feel bad, but you know, we've got to cancel. We can try it another night, but can't do it." Now, in that sort of environment, and you know, she's a good woman, and she says, "I understand," but you can tell, you know, she's disappointed. In that environment, going out the next day and getting her flowers is an effective move. You know, to patch over, she's not really angry. She knows that you've got to do your job, but she's sort of miffed. You know, this always happens. You know, we plan something and your stupid boss, you know, can't organize the work week. You got to stay Friday night. You know, she's PO'd and not wrongfully so. So getting her flowers says, "I understand and I appreciate. I appreciate that you're my wife and you stick behind me." And it's a gesture. You get points for that. Properly so. Now, change the scenario. You cheat on her and you lie to her for 6 months and she catches you. Okay? Very different scenario. And you come home with flowers. "Oh, here, honey. Here's some flowers. Make it all up." The best thing that can happen in that scenario is she throws the flowers in your face and spits at you. Because it's an insult that you think flowers are gonna patch that up. The more likely scenario is she coldly puts the flowers in the trash can. She doesn't say anything to you because you're not worth it at this point. See the difference? What we have in our economy today is not staying late at work Friday night. We have a breakdown in integrity. Our investing experts have failed us. Our economic leaders have failed us. Our political system has failed us. This is the real thing. You don't pushing through some stimulus bill is buying us flowers. And I'm not blaming Obama for it. He's just doing what they're all doing. They're all buying flowers. And this book is talking about buying flowers as far as I'm concerned. It's on the right track, but it cops out in the end. The solution is not sufficiently drastic. The line in a Bob Dylan song from the old days, "Queen Jane Approximately," when all your advisors heave their plastic at your feet to convince you of your pain, trying to prove to you that your conclusions should be more drastic. Won't you come see me, Queen Jane? Our conclusions need to be more drastic. The word crisis signifies something. This isn't a time for buying flowers, and this isn't a time for pushing through stimulus bills. We need, the thing they're right about in this book is we need something dramatic. You see, money isn't dramatic at this point. Money isn't dramatic. Having some of these big shots come forward and say, I was wrong, that's dramatic. That will capture people's attention. And once one does it, there's going to be an avalanche. And it's healing. And it will hurt. Because we're all going to have to do it. We all to different degrees. Obviously, if you're you know, a leader, you've got to apologize for some big stuff. If you're just an average consumer, not so much. But anyone who bought stocks between 1995 and 2008 did something wrong. They did something to further that insane bull market and to destroy our economy by doing so. So we've all got to share, including Rob Bennett. I did it. It was probably 95 when I did it. It was 96 when I got smart. But in 95, I was dancing with those sick returns from that sick era of passive investing. So integrity. What we're trying to do is reclaim our integrity. Now, just a couple, you know, I wrote notes and I haven't even gotten to them yet, so I'm just going to run through them quickly because I don't have much time. But changing of the guard. One of the issues that is, you know, maybe I'll do separate podcasts on some of these. One of the issues that underlies all of our discussions from the first day is I am, because I am raising integrity issues in disguise, you know, I'm talking on the surface, all I'm saying is give people accurate numbers for retirement planning. That's the surface claim. But you see why, the reason it packs such a punch is I'm talking about integrity. And integrity is always job one. Without integrity, you got nothing. Nothing counts once you give up your personal integrity. Nothing you say counts. And the threat here that a lot of people see is the leaders of these boards, they're saying, wait a minute, we haven't told anybody the accurate numbers for 10 years. If we let this guy tell the story, he becomes the leader and all the people who support him. There's a changing of the guard. And they don't want that. They've got their institutional interest. Mrs. Micah made that point. She didn't say it that way, but she was saying, who are you, Rob? I don't like your tone. Here you are coming to this forum. You've only got, you know, 40 posts or whatever it is at this forum, and these other people, they've got big blogs, you know. Who are you to tell us what we should be doing? I said, hey, I'm one person, one guy. That's it. But I am telling you what I sincerely believe. So she's got to react in anger. Because if people are allowed to honestly discuss what I'm saying, it throws what these others have done under a cloud. It's not my intent to do that. I have nothing against any of these people. I like them. I respect them. I can't help it that they got things wrong, but they did. If they supported passive investing, they got stuff wrong. This is a big issue. Big issue. It's a big problem. This is how bull markets get entrenched. The reason why we can't get people to invest rationally is to spill the beans and to tell them what it means to invest rationally means to point out all the mistakes that the big shots made in the years in which the bull market was established. And that's hard stuff. Hard for humans to do. People value integrity less in good times. You know, I always think of just the simplest things. You know, there's a big snowstorm and you go out to the, you know, you struggle out to the store to, you know, to get a carton of milk. And everybody's friendly and helping you out because they're all under pressure. I mean, you know, it's snowstorms aren't really scary. They're sort of, you know. You can't do the things you ordinarily do. You can't get to the video store. You can't get to your job. But you're not going to die. So, you know, getting the newspaper becomes a, you know, an hour-long ordeal. You know, you got to shovel your way to the convenience store. But the point is, when people are under stress like that, they become very friendly and outgoing and helpful and caring. And when people have it good, they become cold. This is human nature. It's not universal, but it's common. There's a lot more coldness when people have it all than there is when people don't have much. That's just the way it is. That's true. We have a lot of historical data showing that. That's one of our problems. One of our problems is we've been living in really good times in the United States during the passive investing era. And we've gotten cold. We've gotten to a point where we're indifferent to the lives we destroy when we tell people this gibberish. We didn't start out thinking we were going to destroy them. We started out thinking it was right. Or if it was wrong, it was a little white lie. You know, it wasn't that wrong. And as it got more and more wrong, as valuations got higher and higher and stocks got more and more dangerous, we were deeper and deeper into the trap. That's an integrity issue. The question there is, can there be integrity at times of, you know, good economic times? And I think there can be, but I think it's more of a challenge. I think one of the things that's going on historically is that we go through these cycles where we have to sort of change the rules of society to rise to a higher level of economic well-being. And because of all the inventions, you know, the technology, we have moved very quickly since the Great Depression to a higher level of economic well-being. And we now have to adjust our understanding of what integrity requires in order to pull that off, and we don't want to. And as a result, the economy is crashing around us, forcing us to look at these issues. It's saying you can't keep your head in the sand forever. You're going to have to deal with this stuff. We don't want to. But if the pain gets bad enough, we will. Or we'll destroy ourselves. You know, those are the two options. Post-Christian America. You know, Newsweek recently had a cover story. No longer a Christian nation. I'm a Christian. But I understand a lot of people aren't. A lot of rules, you know, I call them, as a joke, the 10 perfectly nice suggestions, you know. So I won't offend people, you know, it's a joke. But the point is, if we're not going to believe in the 10 perfectly nice suggestions, we're going to have to believe in something. You have people on the internet, you know, when I talked at that board about, one guy asked me, what's it such a big deal, Rob? Why do you have to tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates? Why do you care? Just drop it. And I said, well, a lot of my friends, you know, they believe these studies and they're going to suffer busted retirements. And these people, I care about them. So I'm not going to do it. I'm going to tell them the truth. I said, is that not a problem that I'm not allowed to tell my friends the truth about investing? He says, oh, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. In the days of when we believed when we all believed, or most of us, in the 10 perfectly good suggestions. We didn't all follow them, to be sure, but we had all at least believed they were perfectly good suggestions. Nobody would say, it's hard to say, whether we should tell our friends the truth about investing. But today, it's up for grabs. Today, it's hard to say. If we're going to be a post-Christian nation, we're going to have something to replace those 10 perfectly good suggestions. Because without integrity, nothing works. The internet doesn't work. The stock market doesn't work without integrity. It's hard to have this discussion. It's a sensitive matter, but we've got to have it. Growth through pain, that's sort of related to the earlier one where I believe we're going to new stages in our development as people. I believe that economic progress is a good thing. I'm not one of these people that say it's a bad thing. But I think it's a troublesome thing. I think it's a good thing, but I think it's sort of like a child becoming an adult. And as a child, you know, it's sort of easy to follow the 10 good suggestions because you don't really have all that many pressures to sin. But as you get older, you got pressures everywhere you turn. And as a society, as you get richer, you know, we all have more influence on the world. We all have more opportunities to engage in behavior that lacks integrity. You know, in the old days, you didn't have to invest in stocks. People just worked until they died. Now you've got to plan a retirement. So you've got to decide, am I going to go along, you know, with passive investing, or am I going to insist on the truth? Insist on common sense. What am I going to do? You got to take sides. And it puts you at odds with your friends. If you start telling your friends, hey, you know, this get-rich-quick stuff can't work, they're going to look at you funny. You know, maybe that doesn't feel so good. So your integrity gets challenged. And we all need to help each other. I believe in an approach to investing called rational investing, where part of what we do is we all sort of stick together and help each other deal with these hard questions. But we're not used to that. The passive model doesn't require that of us. The rational investing model is a little more demanding on the human side. And stories matter. One of the points they made in this book, Animal Spirits, is that we all create stories to explain our lives. They talked about successful marriages. People create stories and stories to explain things, stories to make sense of life, stories to make life meaningful, so that everything isn't just another random event, you know, a series of random events. And I think that's important. I think that's how people live. One of the points they made in the book is that if you go by the economic models that are followed today, they talked about things like unemployment and the amount that employers pay their workers doesn't make sense under the theory. And they try to ignore that and all this sort of thing. And they said if you actually talk to people, you find out what they really care about. And under the economic theories, people should not care, you know, about fairness in what their coworkers are paid. But people do care. In other words, if an employer pays everybody less, but it's a fair distribution based on the work people have done, people will tolerate that. People are pretty good at bearing up at that sort of thing. But if you overpay some and underpay others, people are furious. They can't stand it. The economists say that's irrational. See, that's the efficient market theory. Anything human is just rejected, just thrown overboard. Can't be. Doesn't fit the model. But in real life, that's exactly how people are. It's exactly how people are. And who are these economists to tell us we're wrong to feel that way? Why should we not care about fairness? Fairness matters. You know, integrity matters, fairness matters. Humans matter. There's a reason why we care about fairness. We've got built within us, put there either by God or by evolution, it was put there by something, a desire for justice. And when that desire for justice is denied, it makes us angry. And it makes us inefficient. And it needs to be addressed. And there are indeed unjust things going on in our economy today. And those things do indeed need to be addressed. And in some cases, the market addresses them effectively, better than government. So in those cases, of course, it makes sense to just let the free market operate. But in other cases, the free market doesn't do it, doesn't get the job done. And in cases when the free market doesn't get the job done, you've got two choices. You can have government involvement and thereby steer things to the middle and keep the market generally free, or you can put your head in the sand and ignore the problem, and the problem grows so big that you end up having a total government takeover. But people aren't going to tolerate the inequalities. I mean, people will tolerate some inequalities, but there's limits. And the stuff that we saw, you know, during this era, when passive investing became popular, and I don't mean to say that passive investing did all of this. It did a lot more than people realize. It caused a lot of troubles. But a lot of it, of course, passive investing is a symptom of a different sort of problem. I think it's a symptom of, it's not even a symptom of a problem. It's a symptom of a growth exercise. It's just that we're growing up. You know, we're growing to new levels of wealth, and that changes the rules. And it's hard to change the rules, and we don't want to face it. So we duck these questions. We say, oh, it's not an integrity matter. It's just turn this knob a little bit and everything will be fine. You know, make this little adjustment here. So I'm saying, you know, throw out the liberal ideologies and throw out the conservative ideologies and talk about the human stuff. Talk about why we care about integrity, how we have sacrificed our integrity, what we need to do to get it back. And, you know, maybe it doesn't seem like that. So a lot of people are going to say, Rob, this is an investing podcast? Where's the Sharpe ratio discussion? Rob, I haven't heard you say anything about the Sharpe ratio yet. What is it? 70 minutes in and you haven't said anything about the Sharpe ratio? Rob? Do you understand the rules? Well, the old rules ain't working so hot. Maybe we got to try something different. Sharpe ratio's got nothing to do with any of this. Stock investing is done by people. And people care about integrity. And the old rules have told us not to pay attention to that stuff. Now, we can't change investing so that, you know, the whole thing is an exercise in, sociology, you know. It can't all be about integrity. At some point, we've got to tell people what your stock allocation should be. But we can't exclude it. And it's got to be a middle ground. And the passive model excludes it. It takes it off the table. And what happens, repression is the word. It represses it. Represses discussion of it. When you repress something, you intensify it. You make it more of a problem. It comes back in other forms. This is the great mistake we've made. You know, the word I used to say we need to normalize the safe withdrawal rate discussions. Normalize means we don't join enemy camps. We just let different people have their say. If somebody wants to say they think valuations don't matter, fine. Let them go at it. And some people are going to believe them. That's the way it is. But if some people want to say, no, 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 here's what the historical data says, you let them have it too. And if that scares you, that you see in that a challenge to your integrity because you haven't spoken up until now, well, you know, that's the way it is. You've got to restrain that feeling of defensiveness because that's how we learn. And that's how we grow. And that's how we fix our mistakes. And it will be uncomfortable. It's a lot more uncomfortable to do this stuff than to spend $1 trillion. Because, you know, we've got politicians in place that they know real well how to spend $1 trillion. They got that down. You know, that's just a day at the office for them. What we need to do is have them standing up on a national stage and saying, here are some mistakes I made. And here are some I think some others may have made. And here's my little pitch where I encourage those others to stand up on a stage like I just did and talk about their mistakes. And let me look you in the eye, my fellow American, my fellow investor, and say, yeah, I think you made some mistakes too. And we'll get out of this together or we won't get out of it. But we won't get out of it by pretending that if only everybody would sign on to my ideology, everything would be just fine. That's baby talk. Rob Bennett's take is that that's baby talk. The real stuff is the hard stuff. The issue that matters today is integrity. We need to win back the integrity of our investing experts, win back the integrity of our investing model, win back the integrity of our economic system, win back the integrity of our political system. It's all up for grabs today. That's what the word crisis means. It means it's all up for grabs. And we need to think big. And one last point, we need to think positive. Because it is hard. People really are in pain. That part's true. And the only way I think we can get through it, we can't deny that it's hard. Because that's just truth. And denying the truth is the whole source of the problem. But The reality of it is, once you start doing it, it gets easier. And a lot of good comes from it. As I say, I think the ultimate, where it ultimately takes us is to a much better place, a richer place, a more humane place, a less contentious place, a more fun place. So the pain is worth it. But we need some people of courage stepping to the front and, sucking it up and just saying, yeah, I'm gonna throw the ball up and see where it goes. I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going to say some true words. And I think you'll see that that'll make a bigger difference. That's how we restore confidence. That's how we win people's trust back. And when we win people's trust back in our system and in our market, we've got what it takes to have a thriving economy once again. And we can make up all the losses. You know, it's going to take time. It's not going to be overnight. That would be another lie. But we can do it. But we need to stop goofing around. We need to get serious. We need to get sober. And it's all about integrity. It's all about the subject we don't like to talk about. It's all about integrity, and that's the thing we least want to talk about. If you have some thoughts, please drop me a note. Use the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies.